invitation to today's hometown Alaska told of a brilliant graduate student from China who challenged his Western professor's view that all humans think alike. The difference between you and me, the student said, is I think the world is a circle and you think it's a line. Stunned, the professor embarked on the research that resulted in his book, The Geography of Thought, How Asians and Westerners Think Differently and Why. With China's star rising, chances to interact with the East are only growing, especially here in Alaska. Join three China experts for a conversation about the curious and fundamental differences between East and West and what they mean for our future. But first, here's the news from National Public Radio. Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy, and our topic today is China and Alaska. I think it's been rising in my interest level from seeing the Olympics in China to President Obama going to visit China to realizing that some of our debt here in this country is being financed by China. So it behooves us to learn more. And personally, I hope someday to get to go visit China. I haven't been there before. So I've got three wonderful guests in the studio with me today that I'm really honored to have. We have Paul Dunscombe from UAA's Confucius Institute, which is a group that tries to build cultural ties between the East and the West. We have Tina Meiser, a longtime member of the Alaska Chinese Association, which is a local community cultural group that's been around for 33 years. And one of the things that fascinates me about it is your Friday night Chinese school. So yes, we'll probably talk about that. And then we also have Greg Wolf, who's the executive director of the World Trade Center Alaska, which just hosted an Alaska-China business conference yesterday. And he's about to head off to another trade mission to China in just a few more days. So welcome to you all, and thank you for being with us. I especially want to let our listeners know that they can participate in this conversation with us. You can email us at hometownalaska@kska.org. And if we hear from you during the show and you have a question for our guests, we can put it right to them. So please feel that you can participate by email. You can also call at 550-8433 in Anchorage, or statewide it's 1-888-353-5752. And I also want you to know that this program is being recorded and it'll air again tonight at 10. You can also find the websites of the folks on our show. They all represent an organization, have websites. So if you're curious, you can find them on kska.org. And I also put two books on there that intrigued me. They were recommended to me. So you'll find some reading if you want. One is Three Swans and the other one is The Geography of Thought. So I told our guests that we were going to start off kind of sort of polling all three of them a little bit on the differences between East and West. And I told them that I had read The Geography of Thought, which I found really fascinating and fun, and that it makes the case, it's not just China, it's really the East, but that the West is really characterized by individualism, independence, you know, logical categories when you're thinking about the world, and that the East is really different. It's much more holistic. The watchword might be harmony. Relationships are very important. Fitting in is very important. So these two worlds are getting closer and closer together with technology, globalization, business. How are we going to blend, and you know, what can we bring to the conversation that helps? What should we take away from the conversation that complicates it? I wanted to give a couple of examples from the book, and then we can just talk about them. One of them talked about children and how early it starts. These cultural psychologists were studying this phenomenon, and they showed children three pictures: a cow, a chicken, and a clump of grass. And Western children put the cow and the chicken together because they're animals and that made sense. It's a category that is logical. But Asian children immediately put the cow and the grass together because there's a relationship there. The cow eats the grass. And so that just shows you that there's a little bit of different thinking. Another point the book brought up is that Western children learn nouns much faster than other words. And Eastern children learn verbs much faster than other words. I just think those are interesting things to note. But it you know, Greg is very involved in business, and one of the examples from the book also talked about this was a Japanese deal with an Australian company about providing buying sugar, and they had a 5-year contract, and the sugar price dropped, and so the Japanese businessman wanted to renegotiate the price, but the Australian businessman said, "We've got a contract for 5 years." You know, so the idea that things fit in, and if circumstances change, then you reevaluate the situation. So, given that we think differently, we're more independent, and we're moving into you, for example, Greg, are taking people over to China to start businesses. So when they land there, you know, they there's a whole different orientation for them. So give me your feedback from your worlds of expertise. And Tina, you're living in America, and you're Chinese, so you could really speak to what it's like day to day. So Paul, why don't you've got a broad background. Paul is a East Asian history professor, mm-hmm. and knows a lot about modern China and also modern Japan. So give us a feel for this. You've been living with these dichotomies for a while in your studies.
And it's also something that goes into what I'm attempting to teach students is when you look at differences between East Asian civilization and Western civilization, small differences in really just kind of very basic things ramify over time, have very big effects. And certainly if you look at just how the individual is conceived in East Asia and the West. In the West, if I say, you know, I'm going off to find myself, the basic assumption is I'm going someplace where there aren't any people. So me as an individual is this discrete, atomized unit. And in East Asia, in particular, identity is socially constructed. It's the combinations of you as an individual are really, in many respects, the sum total of your relationships with other people. Now, of course, it's not exclusively that way. That is, in the West, you know, our roles as husbands and wives and sons and daughters and brothers and sisters.
We have relationships, too.
do inform who we are. But there's a privileging that takes place. So in East Asia, that social construction of the individual is really emphasized much more. And in the West, that discrete individual unit is emphasized more. And those differences are actually rather small ones of emphasis, but, you know, over mm-hmm. time they have rather large effects.
Well, there's an example that I want to tell you about. This, again, was young people. They were invited to do anagrams, and this speaks to the relationship idea. The Western students did much better and worked much harder when they got to choose the ones they worked on. And the Asian students did much better and worked harder on the ones they were told their mother had chosen for them, which is just so interesting. It's just very different. The individual versus, it's almost like getting turned off if anybody's cramping your style, if you're a Westerner.
But I mean, this does not mean to say that, individual success is not important and valuable on you know, both sides of the divide.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, individual success benefits the family,
the
benefits
group.
The group.
Yeah.
So you know, one strives to do well for oneself, but one has, you know, a larger objective in view in that respect.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. How about you, Tina? What comes to your mind when you think about these differences, and maybe you've had to live with them in America?
Yeah, I totally agree with Paul. And that is, right now I have half time live at China and half time live at America.
Oh,
and
really?
Yeah, so to me, I can see that is a difference. Yeah. And like my parents taught us, and that time they always just tell you, say, hey, what's your name? It's connect with your family name. You know, you need to do well
mm-hmm.
and to grow or honor your family. You cannot do bad things. Yeah. That is, so you're always thinking about your family, your country. It's bigger than you.
Right.
That's what we taught since we are little.
Right.
Yeah. So you are just a small in the whole society. You are just a little one.
Right.
And you need to do right and do good. Yeah.
Because you represent all of us, not
yeah,
just
you
yourself.
So that is, by the way, that is our family name ahead. So we was a family name first and then your first name. It's not like
Right.
Yeah.
Right,
so they always recognize your family name first, and they will say, oh, where are you from and mm-hmm. what you are.
Right. So now, is that considered a burden, or is it just accepted?
We just accept it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You
mm-hmm.
grow up, and your family, your parents, your ancestor, and come from a long time. That's just a culture.
Right. Now, what about you? You have had children here.
Yeah, I have two.
And is it different for them because they're exposed to Western culture? Is the grass greener on the West for them, or how do they
yes.
work that tangle out between the two of them?
I think when they were young, they fight with. If I say you need to do more practice and study more, and they fight, I say how we need to do it. My friend don't need to do it. My classmate don't need to do it. How I need to recite this. I understand why I need to recite.
Right.
But then after, I think after they go to college and they're more mature, they understand. And just like my son right now travel at China. And he just graduated from college last year. And he decide he will go to learn Chinese and travel in China. And right now they're at Nanjing or Shanghai. I don't know.
Wow.
Yeah,
so he's on his own journey back to China.
Yeah.
That's very interesting.
Yeah.
So he's kind of come full circle in a way.
Yes.
And how about you, Greg? You're in the business climate. It's different than the sort of close familial relations. But I know I visited the Confucius Institute's business etiquette class, and I learned that a lot of these expectations can figure into the business world, too. So what do you know about that?
Yeah, sure. I've spent most of my career working with Alaskans who are interested in doing business in Asia. There's a considerable difference in the business style, the business environment, business etiquette. And the companies that are successful, ultimately, are the ones that understand those differences. And that doesn't mean they have to become experts or to become fluent in the language or something like that. But to the extent that they can avoid mistakes, and to sometimes that might be a small etiquette mistake or something a much more major mistake in strategy, to the extent that they take the time to understand the cultural, historical, other differences, it actually enhances their ability to do successful business.
And do you find that Westerners are willing to do that?
Many aren't, frankly. Many are. We have sort of an impatient business climate. Just typically, we want it fast, direct. Let's get the deal done. I'm here. Let's close the deal. And that generally isn't effective in Asia particularly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Paul, I want to let you know that you have an email. Someone is asking you a question. This is from Paul, and he said, or it's for Paul. I'm sorry. It doesn't say who it's from, but this person is asking what your background is. Do you have a degree in Chinese history, Chinese art, or Chinese language? Did you live in China? Can you speak Mandarin or Cantonese? Have you been active in Alaska's Chinese community?
I have a degree in East Asian history from the University of Kansas, although my secret is, in fact, that I'm a Japan specialist by training. I have obviously studied a great deal about modern China, but I am... my research interests are in Japan. My study and travel has been in Japan. I speak Japanese, although I have spent now a fair amount of time in China and I'm very familiar with its history and culture and do understand those differences and why they matter. So.
And I think you and Tina knew each other, did you not?
Yes, we had.
Somehow you must have, traveled in the Chinese circles here in Anchorage.
Well, in particular, I mean, there is the Alaska Chinese Association brings together people to celebrate that cultural heritage, which is very important. But there's also a consciousness of Asian identity here in Anchorage. So there are other organizations which do celebrate that as well. So through that that common interest, it's how we initially encountered each other.
And Greg, what about are there Chinese people in Anchorage with business connections in China?
Yes.
As well as Alaskans that are not Chinese. In other words, you're not exclusively dealing with Westerners trying to make their contact there.
No, that's right. We work with a variety of people. We work with Chinese Americans or Chinese who are living here in Alaska who are looking to do business back to China. We work with Chinese who contact us, who are interested in doing business with Alaska. We deal with, the Westerners as people like me, who are obviously interested in doing business in the world's fastest growing market. So we work with a variety of people. We work, for example, we're taking a group of Alaskans this weekend on an 11-day trade mission to China. But we also work with inbound missions. In other words, Chinese that are organized to come to look around Alaska to see what Alaska has to offer and to meet people who they may potentially do business with. So we work with both inbound and outbound.
One of the things I read on your website was that China in the next 10 years will be the largest outpouring of tourists because their economy has been improving and they're interested and that there have even been some tour people from China here to check out Alaska and sort of write some articles. And so we may, you know, tourism is very important for Alaska. And if this is a new market for us, we've certainly seen it with Japanese people, right? Mm-hmm. Have been very interested in coming here. Yeah. So.
Right. One of the speakers at our conference yesterday was a representative of the Alaska Travel Industry Association. And they've been active in the China market. And they're not alone. A good number of countries and states from around the world are looking at that market, which is predicted to be in not so many years the largest outbound market in the world. Mm-hmm. So, I think Alaska would like to have its share of that. We feel we have a lot to offer. We have reasonable proximity. Actually, we're relatively close. I think when we talk about the Pacific Rim. We tend to talk about it, some people do, as sort of this faraway place, when actually we're part of the Pacific Rim. We are it, and it is us. And we're actually a neighbor on the Pacific Rim. Mm-hmm. Someone mentioned Japan. It's quicker to fly on a nonstop flight from Anchorage to Tokyo than it is from Anchorage to New York. So
I'm ready to go.
we're very much a part of the Pacific Rim. Alaska has a lot to offer Chinese visitors.
Well, tell me what would bring, and Tina, you might have some perspective on this, what would bring Chinese people to Alaska? What would they come to see?
Yes, I think since last 3 years, I saw more and more Chinese businessmen or tourists came to Alaska. And even I got some call from Los Angeles or China and the email and asking, can I help them manage and organize some
travels?
Travels and how that, because it's far, far away. And so I can see as a more Chinese speaker demanding, for all the business.
But in many respects, I think the thing that attracts would attract Chinese to Alaska is the same thing that in many respects attracts us to Alaska. It's the beauty of the state. It's the ability to experience wilderness and wildlife. It's just the magnificent setting that Alaska is, which is, you don't find it in China. It's a unique experience. And you don't find it in the rest of the United States either. Mm-hmm. So that, I think, is what has always made Alaska a very popular tourist destination, and that I think will be one of its really key selling points for Chinese travelers.
Now, I've been told that China Hot Springs is a big draw for Japanese people who are very interested in seeing the Northern Lights. I've heard that it increases fertility. I have no idea. The rumors that go around. But, would you expect the same thing out of China?
I think with the thing like China Hot Spring, in Japan there's a great subculture that surrounds visits to hot springs, the onsen, that sort of thing. So that, to a certain extent, ties into that in a lovely and exotic setting. Mm-hmm. From the Japanese perspective. That's certainly not unattractive from Chinese. But one of the things that we also need to keep in mind about when we talk about East Asian civilization is that, yes, there is this commonality that exists between Chinese and Japanese and Korean cultures, but there are also some very important differences, and those differences matter. We talk about the kind of collectivity that one finds in East Asian civilization, but within that collectivity, the Chinese are really the rugged individualists
of
East Asia.
Actually, yeah, there was an example from the book about actually saying, making the same point that if you're talking about, you have lots of differences in the East, and that Chinese people are more like Mediterranean people, which would be your individual. Mm-hmm. And they were comparing them to Japanese people who were much – I'm forgetting which country they were likening it to, but there was a big difference. And so between those two, you know, mm-hmm. you could actually – so it's really – it's hard to talk of these big, broad strokes. I apologize for doing that because I know there's 1,000 examples that are different from these. But on the other hand, if you're just trying to, like I said, get your hands around this place, and that is probably going to have a big role in the world and in the U.S.'s future. So, you know, you have to begin somewhere. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I would like each of you to have an opportunity to describe your organization, because I'm hoping this program will pique people's curiosity about China, and that they will know these resources are here in Anchorage and that they can start right away. If you can't take a trip to China, which you probably shouldn't do without some preparation, I'm sure, you can actually start here. So let's go with you, Paul, because I know the Confucius Institute is relatively new. It's I think it opened this fall with a big China Culture Week, which is great. And you're still building. So where are your ambitions? I know it involves the Anchorage School District. So tell us about it.
So the first thing to note is that UAA Confucius Institute is part of a larger program sponsored by the Chinese Ministry of Education. Confucius Institute, there are now somewhere on the order of 300 of them in 80 countries worldwide. And the basic idea is what they sought to do is to create something along the line of the German Goethe Institutes or Spanish Cervantes Institutes, to create an organization to promote knowledge of Chinese language and culture. So for the UAA Confucius Institute, that is our core mission, to promote knowledge of Chinese language and culture. And we do that in various ways by assisting groups who are already doing Chinese language training. We've been able to help the Alaska Chinese Association their classes with some curriculum materials. We look forward to working with the Anchorage School District to help them leverage their resources to build ultimately a Chinese immersion program, working with our own Department of Languages at UAA to help build a Chinese language major, but also offering courses of community interest for those who just have, you know, a curiosity, or for those who are looking for something more tailored in a business setting or something like that.
Do you have an idea of what some of those will be? I know we talked about the business etiquette, but what else? You know, if it isn't business, what might I look for?
Either sort of, you know, introductory business Chinese, or if you're traveling in just for tourism, just essential survival Chinese, or if so. For instance, we talked about tourism, and I can definitely see us putting together a course for the hospitality industry on dealing with, you know, the Chinese tour group and the sort of communications that would require. So we can design all manner of courses for that. But the other, let's not forget the culture part of it, because we've been able to, I think, we've really had an impact in terms of the cultural programs we've been able to put on with Chinese Culture Week back in September, our performance of Beijing Opera, which I believe is the first time ever we've had Opera performed in Anchorage. And that was a wonderful success. And we look forward to putting together more of those speakers series, cultural workshops, those sorts of things.
Are these performers I mean, how do you arrive at who you're going to have? Are they on a kind of circuit going to all the Confucius Institutes? Because you said there's like 30 in the U.S.?
So between 45 and 50 in the U.S.
In the U.S. And then around the world, there's others. So.
And well, we were able to take advantage of a troupe from the National Academy of Chinese Theater Arts, which was doing a tour of the U.S. And so we were able to be sort of the final leg of their journey. So, and these are the sorts of opportunities that Hanban, our Chinese sponsors, can make available to us. So we can, it's really the level of resources that has been dedicated to this, I think, speaks volumes about the importance that the Chinese government places in this program.
Well, I thought it was – when I first thought about it, I thought, well, here's a state university, and it has a program on campus funded by the Chinese government. And just on the face seems different. And yet people said to me, well – what about the Peace Corps? That was all over the world, and it was funded by the U.S. government. There's lots of examples. You gave
the Fulbright program or even the Japan Foundation, or there are any number of organizations that do similar things, and it's to promote cultural understanding, and that's certainly something that
a university stands for. Do you share the expenses, or is it basically financed?
Yes, we do. We receive funds from Hanban to put on various cultural and language programs. We get curriculum material help. They also partner us up with a Chinese institution, university. Our partner is Northeast Normal University in Changchun, which is about 500 miles northeast of Beijing. They have a very excellent language and education program. So they will provide us with language instructors to help put on our programs. But the university also matches the contributions of the Chinese government.
I'm assuming that this is going to mean that we're going to have exchange students coming from China and U.S. students going to,
yes,
to China, and that might, again, facilitate business opportunities or other cultural opportunities.
Oh, indeed.
I'm going to take a little break now, but I just want to say we're on Hometown Alaska, and this is Kathleen McCoy, and we'll be back in a little while. Hi, everybody. We're back on Hometown Alaska, and we're talking about Alaska and China and the East. I want to encourage folks to know they can email us at hometownalaska@kska.org, and you can also call in at 550-8433. And statewide, you can call 1-888-353-5752. And our program will air again tonight at 10, and it's also on our website, so you can listen to a podcast of it later. We were just talking about the Confucius Institute and the idea that we were going to probably be seeing more exchange students coming from China and U.S. students going over to China. Mm-hmm. And it made me think about the possibilities. If we were to grow entrepreneurs in Alaska that were familiar with China, what that would mean in terms of business opportunities for them in the future. And that we've got Greg here from the World Trade Center, and he just had a big conference yesterday at Alaska China Business Conference. I think the state participates in that too. I'm not sure.
Yeah, we have. This is an annual event. It's actually the fifth year that we've done it, done this conference, and it's actually grown each year. We have a couple partners in organizing this. Well, of course, the state of Alaska is our longtime partner, as well as the U.S. Department of Commerce. Their trade promotion agency with the U.S. Commercial Service. So between the World Trade Center representing the private sector, the state of Alaska with the state government, and the U.S. Department of Commerce representing the federal government, we have partnered to put on this event each year.
That's great. So I just want to remind folks who we have in the studio, because we just took a break and I didn't say. We've got Paul Duskin from the Confucius Institute, Tina Meiser from the Anchorage Alaska Chinese Association. I always want to say Anchorage. And of course, Greg Wolf from the World Trade Center. So what were some of the highlights that you had at the conference yesterday?
Well, the We had a variety of presentations, and each year it changes somewhat. But some of the highlights were actually the some of the Alaskan success stories, people who have who are doing business currently in China, and it's sort of an in the trenches type of a presentation where you sort of get to understand the good, the bad, the ugly, the benefits of doing business, the difficulties,
the hardships,
and yeah, sometimes the hardships, but also the successes. And those are particularly valuable because it's not like to have a presentation by someone from Boeing or IBM, some major Fortune 500 company. We're talking to small or medium-sized companies who are able to find success in a market like China. And this is actually fairly heartening for other Alaskans who may have an interest in doing that, that it's possible, that there's a lot of work that's required. It's never easy. There'll be ups and downs, but with the right product or the right service, the right price, the right strategy, the understanding of the local market, are possible.
Can you give us an example of something that's just not IBM? You know, it's just your mom and pop. I mean, is there somebody like that doing business in China from Alaska?
Well, there's quite a few. One example, I'll just speak for one of the one of the companies that presented yesterday.
Uh-huh.
It's an Anchorage-based company called ADSB Technologies, and they are actually a service business, really. But they sell air traffic control systems. That the work in technology was pioneered here in Alaska, a lot of it in rural Alaska.
That's interesting.
And they have found markets in rural China. For these state-of-the-art systems that are being purchased by the government and private buyers there. And this is not a large company, but they've been at it now for I think at least 7 or 8 years, maybe longer. And they have found success in China and also in other Asian markets. This particular company received the Governor's Exporter of the Year Award last year.
Wow.
And
wow.
The president and founder of that spoke at our conference last year, as we've been happy to and very pleased to have him speak for the past several years.
Yeah. Now, that would be finding similarities between the aviation needs in Alaska and the aviation needs in China, because it's rural systems that they're working on. Yeah. I have we have a caller, Mary, on the line, who asked an interesting question for all of you. She's wondering if you would predict, will China stay communist? Are you there, Mary?
Yes, I am.
That's your question, right?
Yes.
And were interested in hearing from anybody here on it?
Yes.
All right. Well, we were talking about business, and actually, you know, I don't know whether
that is business.
It is right. Business, yeah. So.
Well, one of the things that I would point out is, for all intents and purposes, China is a free market capitalist state and economy. It is, however, still ruled by the Chinese Communist Party. They do still, at least officially, seek to the creation of socialism with Chinese characteristics. They do still honor Mao Zedong as the founder, and Mao Zedong thought as the basis of what they do. But for all intents and purposes, ever since late 1978, a fundamental reorientation took place within the CCP, what is referred to as reform and opening up,
mm-hmm.
To basically pursue essentially market-driven capitalist economy and engagement with the wider world. And there's very little to indicate to me that policy is going to be changed anytime soon.
In regards to the world, I am curious then to see why is it that China has to continue to attack Taiwan when they have never owned it?
Well, you have this interesting notion of one country, the one China policy, the notion that people on both sides of the Taiwan Strait recognize that there is only one China and that both of them are parts of it. Part of that has to do with the end of the Civil War in 1949. That is where the nationalist government fled at the end of that time. However, I mean, China did have sovereignty over Taiwan prior to 1895 during the last imperial dynasty. The government of the PRC does claim basically control over all the territories that were part of the Qing dynasty prior to 1911. And so
Japan controlled it.
Well, Japan won it from China in 1895. And after that, in 1945, it reverted to the Republic of China, the nationalist government in China, as a result of the Cairo Declaration.
Huh. So how about you, Tina? Do you have any thoughts about that? No? No?
Like today, I represent this Alaska Chinese Association.
Right.
So to our group is we non-religion and non-politics.
Right.
So it's really
cultural.
Hard. Yeah, only the culture.
Right.
Yeah, we promote culture. So this question, I think I let him answer is better than
yeah.
me.
Yeah. Well, I'm just curious whether in terms of business it matters, because as Paul points out, it's very capitalistic, so it's good for business. The things that the West might wonder about are personal liberties or things like that are a little bit different. But do you have anything to add there?
Yeah, our focus is on the commercial aspects of doing business, and we, I guess, similar to Tina's organization, aren't involved in politics or those types of things. And so long as the American and Alaskan companies can go over there and do good business, and that's where our focus has been and remains.
Mm-hmm. Carol is on the line, and she has a question for you, Greg, right along these lines. Hi, Carol, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you.
And it looks like you have a business advice question.
Well, kind of, sort of. I lived in China for 7 years and thought it was one of the most wonderful places in the world to live. And I'm trying to help some Chinese artists that I met in Hubei province. And I was just wondering if Greg could tell me if his website or his organization only helps big businesses or us little people who are trying to help little people over there. And I can certainly take my answer off the air.
No, I'd be very happy to answer that question. Actually, we're a membership organization, and we have about 100 companies that are companies and individuals that are members. Frankly, most of our membership are small and medium-sized companies, mostly small. And that's sort of a reflection of the Alaska economy itself. We're a state of small businesses. Of course, we have the large companies that are members, some of the banks and airlines and those type of companies. The rank and file membership of the World Trade Center are small and medium-sized companies who may not have the staff or the experience in doing international business. So when they join us, we become essentially their extended staff. And one of the advantages that we have is that maybe they're asking a question that we've already researched and answered many times. We could save them a lot of time and effort and money by being able to answer that question just because we've been through it before. So we help basically on a day-to-day basis. The companies that we're working with are indeed small companies and medium-sized companies.
And I would remind Carol and our other listeners that you can get on our website, kska.org, you can find the World Trade Center Alaska link, and you can go and see. And I told Greg when he came, there's a lot of information on there, surprising background and very useful. So it would be a good place to go.
Yeah, we have for those who are not members today and would have a curiosity in becoming a member, we offer an introductory membership for $250 a year. So that's a chance for you to try out to get to know us, and that gives us a year to prove our worth to you.
That's great. Listen, Tina, I wanna talk to you a little bit because you are right here in Anchorage, and you have this organization that, for one thing, we talked earlier, has a great New Year's celebration.
Yes.
That lots of people. So tell us a little bit about that, and are you planning it for this? You know, what's your timetable, and what's going to be happening next?
Yes. Right now we have two upcoming events. One is Friday, December 4th. We will have a Christmas party at our Chinese school. And on February 14th, December 2010, we will celebrate Chinese New Year with the entire community And it will be Year of the Tiger.
All right. That's great. Where is your event at? Do you know yet, or are you still planning?
Yes, we were at the West High School, and we will start like a noontime to 4 o'clock, and we will have a lunching and 2 hours program.
Oh, that's fantastic. Mm-hmm. So local performers?
You will see line dance and dragon and all the Chinese dance and all the music.
Oh,
musician.
That's great. Yeah. Have you been doing that every year since the organization's been here?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, every year.
So I imagine people know about it and look forward to it.
Yeah, every year we're around 1,000 people attend our event.
Oh, that's great. Mm-hmm. That's great. I also, I mentioned the book Three Swans when we first, and I haven't read it yet. I couldn't find it in town, and I couldn't find it in the libraries. So I ended up ordering it, and it didn't arrive. But I have someone from has written in and asked if it's Wild Swans, Three Daughters of China, and that is the book. And I did find it. Google has a preview copy, and I started to read it last night. So I haven't gotten my own copy. Have you read it, Paul?
I've, in fact, assigned it in one of my classes and get very good student feedback from it. It's wonderful. It's a wonderful story of growing up in China and experiencing much of China's 20th century, which is a fascinating and really quite amazing
story.
Yes.
And, yeah, lots of change. You know, the idea that I picked up from Geography of Thought is that the East is much more willing to consider change than the West is. The West is sort of thinks, hey, tomorrow's going to be pretty much like yesterday. But in fact, that isn't an Eastern perspective. An Eastern perspective is, if it's been going this way for a while, it's probably about to change. And I wonder if, you know, given the world that we live in that is changing so fast based on technology and just mostly technology and its abilities, whether that's going to mean an advantage actually for the East. What do you think?
Well, certainly one of the things that throughout East Asia one has had to deal with this, and certainly China has dealt with this very much throughout the 20th century, is the whole question of how can we create a culture which is modern but still Chinese? And that's been a major challenge for the Chinese over the course of the 20th century, and certainly for the first three quarters of the 20th century, it was quite a struggle. But they certainly seem to have gotten the hang of it in the last couple of decades. And that's brought forward a transition, the scale of which I think is very difficult for people to really kind of wrap their brains around. What's happened in China in the last 30 years, the revolutionary, truly revolutionary changes that have taken place in society, the economy, and really in kind of creating a really cutting-edge modern culture.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, I met a Chinese journalist about 2 years ago when I was studying in California, and we were going into the Olympics, and everybody was excited. Lots of journalists were going over to cover it. She got very upset. She went back to China. She was here to study for a year, went back, and she wrote to all of us. We were all journalists, and she said, if you want, she was insulted by the way the Olympics were being covered by the West because they were focusing on air quality, picking one little thing out and just writing only about that and failing to understand what the Olympics meant to China. And I guess after reading this book and thinking about how everything is in context, then that was pulling one little thing out. And so she was sort of saying, if you want to see a nationalistic China, just keep writing the way you are. You know, that's going to just pull everybody together against that onslaught, which was so sad. It was really sad. So, I don't know. Just interesting phenomena.
Well, it certainly does bring forward when one of the reasons why the Confucius Institute exists is to try and provide that greater context, the ability to understand, you know, exactly what is the cultural context in which China operates, and to be more familiar with it.
Uh-huh.
And that's there's a lot of work that needs to be done in that area, quite frankly.
Certainly. And this is part of getting to know each other. Right? Mm-hmm. Tina, I just wanted you to know that we had an email from someone who's really interested in the Alaska Chinese Association and is interested in the kinds of classes that they're offering. She says, I'm very interested in the Chinese adult classes held by the Chinese Association. I've emailed for additional info over the past year to learn more about the adult classes, but I haven't actually gotten the information. So can you help her out a little bit with that?
Oh, I'm so sorry. Maybe.
Who knows? But at least here's her chance to find out.
Yeah. Most of the time we got a lot of email, and most of the time if I got it, I always answer it. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. We have a Chinese school and meet every Friday 7 to 9 to learn Chinese, and it's open for public and for the kids from 5 years old to the adults.
Is there
level.
Can you just come in and sit down, or do you need to arrange, you know, enroll and pay tuition, or
we are a nonprofit organization, but we need pay the school district rent
for use of the building.
The one semester is $120. Mm-hmm. And I think that's it's pretty reasonable, and most of teachers doing the volunteer base. Mm-hmm. And we have all the teachers, they are passionate to promote Chinese and teach Chinese.
I wanted to tell listeners that if they're interested in reading, I found a story. It was on the Anchorage Daily News website, and there was a video that went with it that shows a class in session, so you get a feel for what the class is like. And I did see sort of children and parents together in the classes. It looked like that was a common.
Yeah, we have we have Chinese school with all the Chinese learning Chinese, and we have adult English class to teach the newcomers English and American culture. Mm-hmm. And we have with all that, we have Tai Chi class, and we have calligraphy, and we have Chinese folk dance, all the culture.
Oh, I didn't realize there was so much more.
More than that. Yeah.
Well, that's really interesting. Gosh, what an asset to have your school in Anchorage. It's great. I'm just going to let our listeners know we're getting down to where, you know, we're only going to take a few more calls if we get them. So 550-8433, if you've got a lingering question in your mind, you want to get it out. 1-888-353-5752. So I want to let each of you sort of think about what you'd like to leave our listeners with today, because I think this was a big topic. You know, I mean, the East and the West meeting is kind of an enormous topic. And we just scratched the surface a little bit. We tried to let people know that your websites are on the KSKA.org website. So if they want to pursue you personally and find out more about what the Confucius Institute is doing, or how they can interact with the World Trade Center, or take a class, or a Tai Chi class, they can easily find it at KSKA.org. But what advice do you have? And I think I'm a good representative because I don't have the background, but I'm very interested and very curious. So help me take the next step to learn how to face and meet the East, without insulting or without the common mistakes that we might make?
Well, certainly one of the things that I always want to emphasize for my students in the classes that I teach is the fact that over the course of the next 50 years or so, nothing at all is going to affect their lives more than what happens in China. And the changes that it brings to the global system, the changes that it brings to the Pacific Rim, and the changes that it brings to the culture of the globe. So it is definitely wise for them to pursue greater knowledge. And fortunately, through organizations like the Confucius Institute, like the Alaska Chinese Association, like the World Trade Center Alaska, there are plentiful community resources to go and begin to learn more about.
No need to be left behind. There's no reason for someone in Anchorage to think, I'm just out of it. Mm-hmm. I can't be cutting edge, because we've got it right here. And as you point out, when Obama stopped here on his way to the East, I thought, well, you know, that's pretty good. You know, we're pretty close. So, mm-hmm. In other words, you're saying it's important, folks. Pay attention.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. How about you, Tina? What would you say?
Oh, I do see that this American and China have a lot of big difference, even at the modern time. But I think when you go to China or meet Chinese people, you just need to have more open mind and look at whole things. A lot of difference, but they're all fantastic and interesting, and you will have a great time, and you will learn a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
When did you come to the U.S.?
1983.
So, and where did you come from, China?
I'm from Taiwan.
From Taiwan?
Mm. Yes.
And as you said, you go back and forth?
Yeah, and actually my parents is from China to Taiwan at 1949.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
So they flew to Taiwan.
So we still have a lot of relatives in China, actually. We went back there almost every couple of years.
Yeah. So when you go from east to west, is it disorienting? And west to east, what's it like for you when you step between these two worlds? Does it take a while to get used to being back in China? Does it take a while to get used to being back in the U.S.?
Yes. Yeah. I think that this right now is, I think like this way, when you went back China, went back Taiwan, the first week is kind of weird because they are totally different. Yeah, yeah. Language difference and food is different. Everything is different. But right. Then after you used to it, and you know, and then say, "Oh, you, yeah." Then you got back. Then you say, "Oh, that's America."
Yeah.
You need to adjust yourself.
It's pretty marvelous that you're so versatile to go back. It's such an opportunity. Yeah. It's a richness, I think.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, I just think I think you're lucky, actually.
Thank you.
Yeah. And how about you, Greg? What would you leave our listeners with? We've got a few.
Well, I'd echo what the other guests have indicated, but clearly the 21st century is China's century, just as the 19th century may have been described as the British century, and the 20th century was America's century.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, all signs point to growing at least economic prominence by China, and that holds true for Alaska.
Especially Alaska.
Yeah, with each passing day, China becomes more important to Alaska. I just looked at I look at our trade numbers. 6 years ago, we did 100 million in exports. Last year, we did 700. And 33 million, so we're up sevenfold. The other thing to be thinking about in terms of business is, China will continue to become an increasingly important customer for Alaska. There's no doubt about it. They want and need the natural resources that we have.
Energy,
mm-hmm. Other natural resources, seafood, which is our number one export, and we have relatively close proximity as part of the Pacific Rim. The other evolution, though, the evolution that's coming in terms of the relationship, the expansion of the relationship, is that increasingly we will see Chinese entities, Chinese companies seeking to invest in Alaska, not just to be a customer, but to actually be a partner, and that we're working with companies that are involved in that right now, and we expect to see more of that. So, with each passing day, the work of the Confucius Institute, the Alaska Chinese Association, and we believe also even with our own organization, it becomes increasingly important to be part of that emerging relationship with China.
That's great. I think it was a real honor to have you all here today and to share your experience and your outlook and your optimism, too, for the future. So I want to thank our guests. It's Greg Wolf from the World Trade Center Alaska, Tina Miser from the Alaska Chinese Association, and Paul Dunscombe from the Confucius Institute. And I want to let our listeners know that next week, Charles Warforth will be your host, and he'll be talking about Anchorage's natural gas shortage. And you'll learn how to prepare in case a cold snap threatens the power or heat systems in the winter. Right now, it's not too cold outside, but we have had cold snaps, and we do know that natural gas is not as plentiful as it used to be. So his guests are going to be the city manager, George Fekalis, and John Sims of NSTAR Natural Gas. And I would like to thank Kristen Spack, our engineer, and Connie Huff, who took our calls today. And I want to thank the listeners who participated in our program. It was really fun to hear from all of you. And I think we just have a few more minutes if there's anything, a couple more seconds, actually, if anybody has anything else to add.
Well, I think the key to the relationship going forward between Alaska and China and America and China, the key word is really respect. Respect the cultural differences. Respect our various achievements. And I think that'll go a long way to smoothing out those differences.
That's a good thought to leave on. Mm. All right. Thank you all. Hometown Alaska. This is Kathleen McCoy. Bye-bye. Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated News and Public Media. An archived copy of today's program, additional information, and links to all the websites mentioned on today's show are available online at kska.org. Send us your comments and suggestions of things you'd like to talk about at Hometown Alaska, 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. This is KSKA Anchorage.